Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
What a fabulous magazine, Ken Ham's Answers Magazine. Fred, this is the January 2013 issue. We've talked about it a bit already, but I'd like to keep going because these articles are great.
Yeah, they are. And there's a great one about the pituitary gland.
Oh, yeah.
So what's up with the gland? I wonder if we should talk through anatomy here.
Oh,
do a little bit of biology
before we talk about what the pituitary gland does.
Yeah, it might help.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so you've got organs, right?
Organs.
I think the gland is an organ. Organelles.
True, it tends to be like a kind of an organ, but okay, yeah, you got organs.
Organelles. And hey, what about the big one? Organisms.
Okay, right. All right, so let's start there. The organism is what? The entire creature, plant, animal, bacteria. It's the whole enchilada, right?
That's right.
Is an enchilada an organism?
It sometimes turns into one if you leave it out.
You are what you eat. Oh, yeah, and it turns into many. And it's made from organisms. But so an organism is the entire animal or plant, right?
Yeah, or bacteria.
Whereas an organelle, and I'm skipping organ.
So you're going right down to the really small guy.
Yeah, the really small guys. The organelle, that's inside a cell. So an organism could be made up of many organs, tissues, maybe we'll talk about tissues too, and cells. Human body has trillions, tens of trillions of cells. It's just shocking.
Yeah. And inside of these cells are organelles.
Organelles. Now, not all cells have organelles, but many. And organelles are these specialized subunits inside of a single cell. And cells are tiny.
Yeah.
So imagine these organelles, how small they are. Usually they're enclosed in a membrane, but not always. I think like the rotary engine. What do we call the outboard motor that helps a bacteria get around?
Flagellum.
The flagellum. So I think that's an organelle, but that's not necessarily enclosed in a membrane. The most obvious one is the nucleus.
Nucleus, okay.
And then there's the mitochondria.
Yeah, the power plant of the cell, right?
That's right.
And there's the ATP.
Many of those in every cell. And ribosomes.
Ribosomes, yep.
So, and that's where the proteins are manufactured. And there are many other kinds of organelles.
Oh, it's amazing, the complexity within a cell.
Yeah, and so they have membranes around them similar to the cell's membrane.
Awesome. Which came first, the organelle or the membrane?
That's such a great question. There's so many questions like that, right? Which came first, the stars or the galaxy?
Yeah.
We don't know. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Or the proto-chicken or the... So it's a lot of fun. And yeah, that'd be difficult, right? Because these organelles would fall apart without their membrane. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a part of what it is. So that's an organelle inside of the cell. But then there is the organ. So
the
organism,
organ.
The whole thing, organelles, parts of inside of a cell, and then an organ. What's an organ?
Like a piano, musical instrument? Or
yes.
Okay.
In Wikipedia, it's either anatomy or musical instrument. But in anatomy, an organ is a collection of tissues that are joined together to serve a common function.
Mm-hmm.
And notice that, serve a common function. All the terminology of biology is the terminology of engineering
and
design.
Absolutely.
All of it, right? And they hate that. They just hate it. It's like liberals watching a movie where the bad guy gets, you know, punished in the end and they cheer and they hate themselves for cheering because they just don't like the whole justice thing.
That's right.
So, okay. So an organ is where you have these tissues joined together to serve a common function. And examples of these kinds of tissues are muscles, brain tissue. And you know what's weird?
Heart. That's an organ, right?
The heart is an organ.
Lung.
The lungs are an organ. I think some tissue is tissue, but not an organ, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, blood is a tissue. But I don't believe that blood is considered an organ.
Which is probably strange to some people or to think that blood is a tissue, but it is.
It is, and it meets the definition of a tissue. And bone is also tissue, which is interesting. So an organ is, we sort of get what an organ is, right? Well, then what is a gland? All glands are considered organs, but they're a little bit different. glands, typically all they'll do, they're like a limited subset of organs, and they typically will secrete some kind of a substance, like a hormone or a pheromone or saliva or something like that. So, Fred, there are two kinds of glands. There's endocrine and exocrine. When you go to the doctor, you might hear about your endocrine glands, and they secrete chemicals, typically hormones, directly into the bloodstream.
Endocrines, right into the bloodstream.
Right.
Okay.
Endocrine, where exocrine, exo would mean it's not going into the bloodstream. It's going out of something, like your sweat glands. They're excreting something out of the body or out into some kind of a cavity, like your saliva glands. And they typically would have tear ducts. They are supplied by glands.
Yep. They're like a runny nose on a cold day.
Yeah, that's a great example. Also, one last thought about glands. When they release a hormone, we talk about this in a lot of our pro-life shows. A hormone is a chemical signal to some other organ or gland in the body. A pheromone is different. A pheromone is a chemical signal to another organism. So you know how animals in the wild find each other, typically to mate, and for other reasons? Well, they release pheromones. Not as a signal within their own body, but to other organisms.
Yeah.
And it turns out that when the baby's coming down the fallopian tube, starting from a single-celled embryo to then it's beginning to multiply over a few days, it's coming down the fallopian tube, and it sends out a pheromone to mom. And the pheromone is a chemical signal saying, I'm here and I'm hungry. Please get ready to feed me, mom. And so that's the baby's first cry is a pheromone.
Wow, that's interesting.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
The pituitary gland. So it's a gland.
Okay. So the pituitary is a gland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This gland is almost kind of dead center of your skull. It's between your nose and the back of your head. It sits right at the base of the brain. It's not part of the brain, but it sits right next to it.
So it's like behind your nose, behind your sinuses.
Yeah. Go behind your nose and your sinuses. And they used to think that it caused runny noses, and it didn't. You know, it was so dumb. They thought it was a leftover organ. Boy, you know, imagine taking this thing out. We'll find out what that would have done.
Well, it's sort of typical, right, that they used to say there were about 100 vestigial organs in the human body.
Yep.
And I checked on Wikipedia, not that they're authoritative, but they're evolutionary.
Yeah.
So they tend to err on the pro-Darwin side.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that the hypothalamus, which I think we'll talk about because that's attached to the pituitary gland, they work together. And they said the hypothalamus was considered vestigial. And, you know, it's a bit harder to identify these structures because they're groupings of cells in the brain. But how big is the pituitary about? Do you recall?
Yeah, it's about the size of a pea. It's pretty small.
So it's tiny. And they used to think it made your nose run.
Yeah. So the origin of snot-nosed kids.
But now they know that it does more than that.
They do. It's definitely not just some bad piece of leftover material like they like to assume
like your tonsils, your appendix, and on and on. Turns out they call it the master gland, except the more we learn, we realize it's really controlled by an even higher level master gland, the hypothalamus. But what kinds of things are controlled by your pituitary gland? What kinds of things?
Well, for example, production of pigment, which is, you know, what's pigment?
Your skin, like suntanning, for example, the melanin in your skin.
Yep. And then, hey, how about your bones? Do they need to grow?
Ooh.
What controls that?
As you get older, your bones grow, right? And then they stop growing, thankfully.
Yeah.
Your body needs to know when they should grow and how much they should grow. And if it didn't know, you'd have a disease. You'd die.
Yep.
And so the pituitary, you mean it even controls the rate of the growth of your bones. That's amazing.
It is. And it sends what you talked about before. It sends out these hormones that are chemical messengers. And it sends these where? Into the blood to signal.
All throughout your body.
Yeah.
So many things.
So yeah, it produces many other body functions. For example, vital body functions such as the kidney getting rid of water.
Oh.
So the pituitary gland, if you have problems with that.
What if it didn't know how much water to get rid of, and then you would become dehydrated because your kidney's overacting?
Yep.
And what if it didn't get rid of, then your body would be poisoned. Wow. So the pituitary gland does that.
That's right. So, Bob, it also produces lactation, which is milk production. Hey, there's over 300 more I could go through. You want me to go through them?
No. I think we'll run out of time. It is so awesome that this master gland is so tiny, and yet it's so crucial. And it points to, as Answers in Genesis often points out, creationists all over the world point out, that the brilliant design all points to God's majesty, because God is just absolutely brilliant beyond measure. He has this transcendent brilliance.
That's right.
Hypothalamus. And Fred, like the pituitary gland being controlled by the hypothalamus, they're sort of attached. They're related. The hypothalamus hangs on this little stalk attached to the pituitary gland, and there are blood vessels connecting the two. There are chemical signals going back and forth, and the relationship between these two is just absolutely stunning.
It is. It's amazing. You know, this kind of reminds me, wasn't there a study a long time ago? It was a flawed study on how big this gland was, and they associated it with homosexuality. They said, well, they have a smaller hypothalamus gland.
That's exactly right. They were looking at the hypothalamus region, the gland, and they subdivided it into these parts. And they said, well, these parts here in homosexual brains, they're smaller than in heterosexual men or heterosexual women. This was back, Fred, when Bob and Your Life first went on the air, 1991. Mm-hmm. That's when the study came out in the journal Science.
That's right. I remember hearing about it, and I wasn't that involved in creation at the time.
Yeah, and the media went wild, and the study was bogus. I think we're saying it was bogus. We should explain how it was bogus. The media went wild. I remember thinking, well, this guy, Simon LaVey, I wonder if he's related. He was the author of the study. I wonder if he's related to Sandor LaVey. Do you remember that name? He wrote the Satanic Bible.
Oh, that's right.
And I really
wonder if they are related.
I really don't know. They accomplished similar ends. Lying to people and making them think that homosexuality is natural, is healthy, is good, just an alternative lifestyle, when it leads to death.
That's right.
It leads to death. And Jesus warned us against sexual immorality. The hypothalamus in that study, for one, LaVey took this tiny sample. He took 19 homosexual men, their hypothalamus from their brain after they died, obviously. So he took 19 homosexual brains, or you know, after these patients died in hospitals, typically of AIDS, they died. And then
they died at a very young age compared to everyone else.
Yeah. And then
like around 39, 41 years, something like that.
And then he took 16 brains of heterosexuals, mostly men, some women. And it turns out, that was weird, about, I think, six of those people also died of AIDS or AIDS-related illness. Hmm. So the whole thing was a little confusing.
Well, those are huge samples.
I know. They're such, right?
Yeah, man, this is going to be such a convincing
study. So the danger of just blowing it. His results, by the way, contradicted previous results of small sample studies. But of the homosexual hypothalamus that he measured, some of those were larger than the median heterosexual hypothalamus, and some of the heterosexual hypothalamus sections were smaller than the average homosexual size. And so he had a tiny sample, and it's not like it was consistent.
Oh, man.
And
of course, it gets widely reported, like you said.
Widely, like it's de facto true. In fact, I recommend people go to Dr. Paul Cameron's work at the Family Research Institute, Colorado Springs. He's a longtime friend of Bob and Your Live and of Real Science Radio. And Dr. Cameron has documented all this, done a wonderful job. The homosexuals hate him.
Yep.
He's been published in peer-reviewed journals. He's absolutely brilliant, very reliable. And so they quote this study, and I remember us on the air way back in the early 90s explaining why this study was unreliable. And it could not be trusted. In the media, they cannot be trusted.
They can't.
Because they have this godless agenda.
They do.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting, Bob, is behavior can actually affect your brain, your body.
Yeah.
Do you have some examples?
You put me on the spot. I bet we could think of some. Well, what if you eat too much?
Yeah.
That's a big example I'm very familiar with. Yeah, there's a study we reported on Bob and Your Live of kids playing video games. And they said that if kids play more than, I forget exactly, but if they play on average more than 10 hours a week, they have a measured change in their brain. I think it was in their frontal lobe, specifically in an area that they've identified with aggression. And that's not surprising when you hear it. It's like, wow. So behavior certainly affects not only your body, mm-hmm. but specifically your brain, which is part of your body. A lot of kids play a lot more than that.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's not surprising how aggressive kids are, not only for that reason, for 100 reasons. ADHD, what is it? 1 out of 6 kids, they say, have ADHD.
Oh, yeah.
ADD.
They would have said I did if that was around back when I was.
Used to be ADD, which was easier to say.
ADD?
Yeah, and I knew what it stood for, adult discipline disorder, because the teachers don't know how to discipline
kids. That's right.
That's why the kids are brats.
Yep.
So, Fred, the hypothalamus, it monitors our temperature, our blood pressure, the chemicals in our blood. This is all so crucial and so brilliant. And so when you think about Adam and Eve, when God made them, they couldn't hang around for millions of years waiting for their pituitary gland to evolve by random changes in natural selection.
Yeah, I mean, they're making adjustments on the fly, right? Yeah, I mean, these things are important, and they're regularly maintaining the body's
equilibrium and growth rates.
Oh, absolutely.
And so just imagine before, if Darwinism were true, before a pituitary gland actually evolved, then all these things have to, why? How's it going to happen?
How does that work? Yeah.
And the thing, if it has a skeleton, the bones are going to keep growing till they break out of the skin. So it's all broken, the whole theory of Darwinism, of course. What else should we look at in this magazine?
So another interesting substance I always thought is fascinating is water, of all things.
Water.
Yeah.
I love water.
Yeah. I do too. I like water.
God
keeps me alive.
This is the blue planet where we have an enormous quantity of liquid water on the Earth.
That's right. Can we survive without water? No. I mean, it's very important. But are there other features of water that we're not, that
not
we never
obvious.
Really think of? That, yeah, that aren't obvious.
Well, what are the obvious ones? The obvious features of water are like it dissolves things, right? It's Earth's universal solvent for the whole ecosystem. So nutrients can be cycled through, and it's so vital. But then there's another one we've been talking about on this show for 22 years, and it's that water, when it freezes, does something different than any other liquid when it freezes. Typically, I learned in school, Fred, in like general science, or when you heat something, it expands. And when you make it cold, it contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And so if water behaved that way, then it turns out that fish in lakes around the world would not be able to survive a winter because they would all die. Why?
When water turns to ice, gets really cold, you get ice cubes. And what does it do? Does it float to the bottom?
No, it doesn't sink.
It floats to the top, right?
Right, exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so because water works opposite of everything else, the very chemistry of it, the physics of water molecules, enables the life in rivers and lakes to be protected from cold winters.
So you got that ice on top, like when you a lake in the winter.
Yeah.
And it's actually protecting the fish. I bet people never really thought of that.
Yeah. Like they think, oh, those poor fish under that ice.
Yeah.
But the ice is insulating. It's like a blanket
over
the lake.
That's right.
So that the fish can survive, which they do very well. And
they would not if the ice had sank to the bottom.
Think about it. If it sank, like up in Georgetown, Colorado, there's a nice lake there, right?
Okay.
In Evergreen Lake, our kids go ice skating on Evergreen Lake. We have taken them to play hockey on Evergreen Lake in the winter. And if those lakes froze and the ice sunk, that means lakes would freeze from the bottom up, not the top down.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the fish would be forced closer and closer to the surface, and they would freeze more quickly as they were freezing from the bottom to the top. And eventually, the fish and the other life in those lakes would be exposed to the elements, and they die.
Yeah, that's right.
So God's design, even of the water molecule, which means his design of the periodic table and hydrogen and oxygen, it's all so brilliant and so perfect.
So what about water boiling? Does that happen right away?
Well, not when you watch it. When you watch a pot, it seems like it takes forever. And that's the point of this article in Answers Magazine by Heather Brinson Bruce, this water's life-saving secret. Fred, she points out that water has this wonderful ability to retain heat. It's called its heat capacity. It takes a lot of energy to raise the temperature of water, and it takes a lot of time for warm water to cool. And because of that, it has just these most amazing benefits to Earth, because we have all this water on Earth.
So, Bob, one of the things I found real interesting that you really don't think of is how the oceans regulate the temperatures of cities, you know, like coastal cities. If you go more inland, the temperatures can fluctuate a lot more.
Yeah, like in Oregon, for example, you go inside the state, it'll get terribly cold in the winter and really hot in the summer. But along the coast of the
Pacific, it's regulated. You have a lot less of a magnitude of change.
Much more mild, right? Mm-hmm. And Heather, in this article, she points out on Mars, where Mars, you know, it's partly because of Mars not having an atmosphere like we do. It has a very thin atmosphere, but also it doesn't have all this water that we have on Earth and all this liquid water that we have. And so the difference between night and day on Mars is so dramatic. It's the difference between freezing and boiling, literally. It's up 180 degrees Fahrenheit
in one day.
In one day, between night and day.
Can you imagine that?
And not every day, and it depends on where Mars is in its orbit and all, but it has that kind of a swing, and that 180 degrees Fahrenheit is also in Celsius. It's exactly 100 degrees Celsius, the difference, which is cool. It's easy to remember that way.
Yep.
In 100 Celsius, zero is freezing, and 100 is boiling.
Yeah.
So you go from freezing to boiling between night and day.
Wow. So again, it's not only the atmosphere, it's the fact that Mars does not have any water.
Exactly.
Of course, they keep trying to find water on Mars.
And they might have a little bit. I think whatever they do have, I think
it'll be a small amount. Yeah.
I think it was from comets. But anyway, that's
another
show.
Earth having a huge amount of water, more water than it has landmass, and people don't think of it as a big insulator.
Fred, this helps us also understand global warming. When we recognize that the Earth's ecosystem was designed by God, we don't have to be as freaked out and as paranoid if we thought it was all just a big precarious accident, just barely sitting there. But God designed it. So if it gets a little warmer, you have more evaporation, more clouds, and they reflect the sun's energy back out into space. So then it cools off a little.
Yeah.
Cools off a little. You have less evaporation, fewer clouds. The Earth absorbs more heat from the sun. And thousands of scientists have signed a petition, petitionproject.org, where they've said, look, there is no man-made global warming crisis.
No. Isn't it just cyclical through time?
Well, it sure seems that, right? We had the Ice Age, which we should talk about soon, because that's another Answers article coming up.
Global cooling.
We had the mini Ice Age. The Earth warms up after those. Did you see on the Drudge Report recently, there was a headline from Australia? I think it's the main paper in Australia, The Australian. Do you remember the point of the headline?
Isn't there like a 20-year hiatus in rising temperatures?
That's right. Climate scientists are puzzled. They said, why isn't it getting warmer? And Fred, that ties in with so many stories we've done, including that the ice in Antarctica is getting more ice, like thousands of kilometers more, and it's getting thicker. And they say, well, the reason there's more ice in Antarctica is because of global warming.
Global warming.
That's what they say. What are you going to do, you know? But we point out, in fact, at realscienceradio.com/globalwarming, that's easy to remember, right?
Yep.
Global-warming, we point out that scientists are saying, look, the global warming comes from the sun. The sun is what causes global warming, and that there is a lot of fraudulent science in this end of the world, doom and gloom, global warming, we have to support socialism, scientific community.
That's right. And if you go back 30 years, I think it was either Time or Newsweek, talked about global cooling. That was the big story.
Yes.
And, so, you know, in 30 years, it'll be back to global cooling.
Yeah, I think you're right. And at realscienceradio.com/globalwarming, we, in fact, report on that. Mm-hmm. And we let people see from a book way back then, and it was titled The Coming Ice Age.
Yeah.
But it's hysterical. It had a chapter on global cooling, the politics of global cooling. It's just
so
too
in 30
funny.
Years, there'll be some president they blame the global cooling on.
Yes.
Like, they can't blame George Bush then, can they? I think it's all Martin Van Buren's fault.
What in the world did that poor slob do? So, hey, Fred, we only have a few minutes left. You think we could talk about these snails?
Yeah.
The sea snails.
Yeah, snails and their casings.
That's so fun.
Their shells. What's up with that?
They're so strong. And this article by John Upchurch in Answers Magazine, it points out that when industry needs something strong, they typically turn to metals.
Yep.
They make things out of steel and all. Mm-hmm. Well, they found out that snails are so phenomenally strong. When a big fish bites down on one of these snail shells, mm-hmm. quite often the snail survives.
The snail wins.
Because it's stronger than iron. In fact, it's a composite material.
It is. And it's interesting because when they looked at it, it's mostly calcium carbonate. Now, that's, that's what Tums are made of. I mean, that's not that hard. I have to chew on those things.
Wait, Tums? You mean Tums. What you take for antacid?
Yeah, which I have like a big supply of that.
Okay. So Tums, I don't think of Tums as armor for soldiers. I'm not going to make armor out of Tums, right? Calcium carbonate. But what God did when he made these lowly creatures is that he made the calcium carbonate in such a way at this nano scale, like billionths of a meter, where they look like little Christmas trees. And because there are all these millions of little Christmas trees, you can't see it with the eye. And then in between the Christmas trees, there's this other biological sort of like glue.
Kind of organic bridges.
Yes. And so when a fish crunches down with its strong jaws, those bridges between the Christmas trees absorb that force.
Yeah, and it actually makes the shell stronger. And so it's made of two different kinds of carbonate, too, calcium carbonate. So it's the mixture of the two that makes this thing very strong also.
The composition and the design.
That's
mixture.
Right.
And so now researchers are trying to copy it, and they're beginning to, in some way, begin to mimic this, but not even close to what
not
God
even close, but they're
can
trying
do.
To come up with a body armor.
Yes.
Maybe Iron Man kind of thing.
Which would be, well, that'd be fun, right? And it'd be wonderful for police. Or especially soldiers.
Do you think they'd call him Snail Man, or would that not be good marketing?
Snail Man. Probably not quite as tough as snails. That's the name of the article, Tough as Snails. And so this is a great example of God's brilliance that he can do this. We offer a DVD through Real Science Radio called Programming of Life by Dr. Don Johnson. And I think it's the best cellular biology DVD ever made. It's on our store at realscienceradio.com. Just click on the store and look for it, Programming of Life, and it'll give you an idea of the brilliant engineering of our Creator God, and that will help you have a better appreciation and understanding of the world around you.
Yeah, the grand engineer. It's a marvel to behold.
Yes. And so, thank you, Fred. What another fun episode of Real Science
Radio.
Oh, this is
great. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Our website, realscienceradio.com. You could also call in 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And if you give, donate to us. It helps us stay on the air. And by buying our science materials, that helps also. May God bless you.
By the handiwork of God, tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Science Radio, keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.